In this clip, I want to spend a few minutes looking at Romans 3, verse 31. I do so because it's a very important text. In two posts recently, this text has been raised, and I have decided that it's right that I should address this text. Because on the surface, it's a mortal blow, the death knell, to New Covenant theology. After all, in my works, on these video clips, and in my articles and books and so on, you will find me saying over and over again that Christ has fulfilled the law and rendered it obsolete. He's brought the law to his God-ordained end and purpose. He's accomplished it. He has fulfilled it. He's brought it to the terminus. He has done away with it. In fact, the believer has died to the law to be married to Christ. The believer is no longer under the law. He is free from the law, released from the law, and at liberty from the law. And so on and so on. I've been saying all these things. And now this text. Paul says, do we nullify the law by this faith? No, not at all. We establish, we uphold the law. This text then, Romans 3:31, clearly runs contrary to all that I've been claiming. Hang on a minute. It's not me claiming it. I've been quoting Hebrews 8:13, Romans chapter 6, Romans chapter 7, verses 1 to 6, 2 Corinthians 3, Galatians 4:21 to 5:1, and so on and so on and so on. It's the apostles, the apostolic writers that I've been quoting. It's not me that's embarrassed by this text, if you like. If there's any embarrassment at all, you have to lay it at the feet of the apostolic writers. Indeed, Paul himself. Read Romans 8, 1 to 4. Read Romans 10, verse 4. Read Romans chapter 6. And see, he's been saying all these things. And yet in this text, he says, do we make void the law then? Do we nullify it? No. We uphold it. We establish it. Has he shot himself in the foot? Of course he has not. Indeed, this text, far from being an embarrassment to New Covenant theology, is a cleansing text. So much so that I'd be inclined in the future, if I write a book on this subject, to use this as an epigraph. Do we make void the law then? Do we nullify it? No. We uphold it. We establish it. Because that's exactly what Paul is saying here. So, what is he saying here? Well, it's very important indeed. So important is it. I am minded to try and write something on it and produce it in my works in the future. It is a very important text. Let's be clear on it. What are you saying here, Paul? Well, the answer is, you have to read the context. And what is the context here? How far back should we go? Well, let's start at chapter 1 and verse 18. Let's see the argument all the way through. Because this is a clinching text, a climax text, the punchline in the apostle's argument. From verse 18 of chapter 1, he's been saying this, all men are sinners and under the wrath of God. The Gentiles, first of all. And he proves this in chapter 1, verse 18 and on. Notice he does not refer to the law. Of course not, because the Gentiles, chapter 2, verse 14 and 15, never had the law. But nevertheless, they have a law of sorts, and they're guilty. They're sinners in Adam, and they're dead in trespasses and sins. and under the wrath of God, all Gentiles are. Chapter 2. Ah, but you Jews, you too are condemned. Ah, but we've got the law, Paul. Of course you have. Chapter 3. You were given the law. Chapter 3, the opening verses. You were given the very articles of God. Yes, that's true. Tremendous privilege. Back to chapter 2. But it's not having the law, you Jews. It's doing it. That's what counts. You see, none of us, says Paul, have kept the law. I didn't. I broke it. Romans chapter 7. I was a sinner. I was condemned under the law. And so are you. Chapter 3. There's not one of us has kept the law. We're all guilty, condemned, and ruined. The law, yes, but we've broken it. We can't keep it. If we could keep it, it would establish righteousness for us. But we have failed. We have sinned. Chapter 3, verse 19, all of us have sinned. Gentiles in Adam and under their law, but we Jews under our law. And our mouths must be stopped, for we're guilty before God. But now, he says, God has broken into the human race, and by his Son, sent his Son, made under the law, and established a righteousness without the law, that is received by faith, the imputed righteousness of Christ. What is he talking about? Galatians 4:4, Christ was made under the law. The law and the prophets, says Paul, chapter 3, verse 21 and on, the law and the prophets witness to the coming of Christ and the establishment of the gospel. The law could not provide this righteousness because we're all breakers of the law. We're all condemned. But the law spoke of it and revealed the coming of Christ. And Christ came under the law and kept the law and suffered under the law, was cursed under the law, Galatians 3, verse 13, and redeemed sinners by his death, by the shedding of his blood, and by his righteousness. And all that is imputed to every single sinner who believes. God has vindicated the law, fulfilled the law, completed the law in Christ, and applied that fully to every believing sinner. Do we nullify the law by this gospel? Do we kick over the traces? Not at all. No, indeed. We establish, we uphold the law by this faith, by this gospel. You see, my friend, until Christ, nobody ever fulfilled the law. Nobody. But nobody. Moses, Joshua, David, the prophets. Not one of them. Not one of them gave God his right. But Christ, in the gospel, in his life and death, fully satisfied every demand of God in the law. That's why the gospel, that's why the new covenant establishes the law, upholds the law, confirms the law, ratifies the law, because Christ met every requirement absolutely, fully, and perfectly. What is more, that is imputed to everyone who believes. Romans 8, verses 1 to 4. The righteous requirement of the law is fulfilled in us. I'm sure that's speaking about sanctification there. But it also includes this. Romans chapter 6. We are one with Christ, united to Christ, identified with Christ. So as he perfectly fulfilled the law, as he suffered and died under the law, so we who are in Christ. So Christ is the end of the law. He has perfected it. He is the goal of it. And that's New Covenant theology. And this text really does establish that text. And that text really does confirm New Covenant theology. I quoted some other meanings to the word establish here. You'll excuse me if I read the text to you. For example, if you look at the lexicon, Thayer, you will see that the word for establish means to uphold, sustain the authority, sustain the force of. This text, he does away with the first in order to establish the second. That's Hebrews 10, verse 9. Christ came to establish the second, to do away with the first. He's talking about the first covenant, to bring in the second, to ratify, sustain the authority of the will of God. Or again, Mark 7, verse 9. You have a fine way of rejecting the commandment of God in order to establish your tradition. The word there means to uphold, sustain the authority of your tradition, the force of it. Or the word can mean to ratify or confirm. I'm quoting Thayer again. Every charge must be established, confirmed, ratified by the evidence of two or three witnesses. That's 2 Corinthians 13, verse 1. What I'm saying is, the word establish here means to confirm, to ratify, to uphold, to sustain the authority of. And that's precisely what Christ did. He ratified it, the law. He confirmed the law. He sustained the authority of the law. He upheld it. He really did establish it. He fulfilled it. He completed it. And of course, it's Matthew 5, verses 17 to 18. He didn't come to set it aside or abolish it. He came to fulfill it, to perfect it, to bring it to its God-intended end and purpose, Galatians chapter 3, 19 and on. And that is what Romans 3, verse 31 says. An embarrassment to New Covenant theology? As I said, I would use it for an epigraph in the future. Why? Because it really does justify, substantiate, confirm New Covenant theology. And the other way around as well. New Covenant theology looks at this text and glories in it without any gloss or alteration or fiddling or adjusting whatsoever. What about covenant theology? Well, I looked at Calvin on this text. Not that he's a covenant theologian, strictly speaking. He came before covenant theology really was established. But what does he say on it? Well, you can read it for yourself. There is some good there, much good there. He quotes Matthew 5, verse 17 to 18, yes. But he's soon into the old Aquinas game. And what's that? Divide the law into three bits. Well, two bits here, moral and ceremonial. He's into his preparation scheme. And he's into his sanctification under the moral law. But it won't wash. All that glossing is foreign to the text. Paul is talking about the law, the whole law. And Christ has fulfilled and established and confirmed and perfected and therefore rendered obsolete the entire law. That's what Paul is saying here, consistent with his teaching elsewhere, of course. You see, if covenant theologians are right, and this text means that believers are under the law for sanctification, as Calvin says, then it's the whole law. Strange, that is, when you've got to fit it with the other text. And they don't like that. And therefore they gloss it. But New Covenant theology doesn't gloss this text. It takes it as it stands, and it preaches it. And I'm not apologizing for this text. I'm proclaiming it. I tell you this, in the New Covenant, Christ has upheld every last atom of the law. And he's applied and imputed that to his people. They, by faith, have perfectly kept the law, so they are free of condemnation. And he has, by one offering, perfected all his people. And that really does ratify, sustain, confirm, and uphold the law. Of course, the believer now is released from that law and lives and serves Christ in the new way of the Spirit, Romans 7, 4-6. Walking in the power of the Spirit, Romans 8, verse 1 and onwards. But that's another story. This text, Romans 3, verse 31, confirms New Covenant theology. It establishes it, because the gospel, the faith that the apostle has set out here, vindicates the law, vindicates God, gives him all his due, so that he is just and the justifier of the one who trusts in Jesus. Have you trusted in Jesus? Have you trusted Christ? If so, in him you have fulfilled the law. It's all fulfilled in you. You are free from it because you have completed it in Christ. Christ has upheld the law, and we preach Christ, him crucified, for by one act of obedience he has made sinners righteous. Those who are in him are perfectly righteous before God. Do we then, by this gospel, nullify the law? No, not at all. Not at all. Rather, we uphold the law. We establish it. It is all fulfilled in Christ.